Welcome to Chevrons Locked, a Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
And we are going to be talking about The Children of the Gods, so the first episode of Stargate SG-1, both parts together. We're going to start with Melanie giving us our synopsis.
Okay, so this is from IMDb. Colonel Jack O'Neill is brought out of retirement to lead a new expedition back to Abydos, only to find an old friend, a new enemy, and a far wider use of the Stargate.
I like it. It's concise, but it's like almost poetic and pretty descriptive. It does cover a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Children of the Gods was written by Jonathan Glassner and Brad Wright, who are the creators of the show, functionally the people who adapted it into a TV show. And it was directed by Mario Azzopardi. It originally aired July 27th, 1997. All right, let's just jump right in, starting with the cold open, which is just super fun. Tell me what you guys thought.
I thought it was a pretty good cold open, all together told. My only, like, thought was, so how long, I mean, has there just been military personnel stationed at the SGC effectively guarding this inactive gate? Like, do you think there's, like, a rumor in, like, the Air Force or, like, the military that's like, listen, if you want the prime assignment, it is guarding the Stargate. We don't know what it is or what it does, but you get to hang around and play poker, and that's your whole job. That's pretty much it. I thought that was a really, like, funny way for them to open, but it goes from, like, 0 to 100 so quickly, and it kind of does a really good job about, like, sucking you in and establishing, hey, bad guy, good guy, weird magic sci-fi thing. So for an establishing shot, for an establishing opening, I thought it's really effective.
Yeah, I thought it was incredibly effective as well. I also love the way that they did the crane shot for the very first shot, kind of starting behind the Stargate and up and over and around. I thought it established the stakes early on, which is something that was lacking in the movie. I never felt like I knew what the stakes were in the movie. And right away, we've established that there are stakes and it's dangerous and scary and cool.
Yeah. Mel?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, I mean, y'all basically said everything about it. So.
Oh, one thing I did want to note, because I thought it was actually an interesting thing that they did to play in later, is that when all of those Air Force soldiers first start shooting at the Jaffa and most of the bullets are bouncing off, and then eventually one takes out the first Jaffa, the look on Apophis's face when that happens, he looks genuinely surprised and upset. And so I think that plays into the way that we establish later on that that kind of shows us how Teal'c could maybe see that these are the people that could possibly take down the Goa'uld, because Apophis clearly had never met real resistance before. He seemed really freaked out by that.
Yeah, I mean, it always makes me wonder, because, like as we go through, like, the series, we meet relatively advanced cultures, so I would find it kind of harder to believe that there wouldn't be a culture out there who had, like, a more powerful, obviously, like, with the exception being, like, the Asgard and the Nox, but the, just, like, the people that the Goa'uld are going after, I mean, they're fairly advanced. But now that I'm talking, I realize I'm talking out of my butt, and that is not true, I don't think. And, like, doesn't Teal'c say that, like, we're advanced? Like, if Ra had never come here and, like, left us behind, we never would have, like, advanced.
No, they basically say that because we overthrew Ra,
right,
and advanced. Because part of what the Goa will do is that they stifle any advancements.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to more primitive cultures. They take them over really easily because they don't have any weapons. And then they enslave them and prevent them from ever advancing. And so there are some races that we see end up being advanced because they managed to overthrow the Goa'uld like Earth did.
Yeah.
And there are some that are advanced because they never had Goa'uld interference.
Yes, you're totally right. Which is interesting, because I guess I always thought, like, when Teal'c said, you were the first who I believe could, like, overthrow them, you're the first, I believe, who could do it, I kind of weirdly thought that he meant more like he saw something in Jack, like, strength of character or something, but maybe I'm way off.
I do think there could be something specifically that he saw in Jack, but we can get to that too.
Sorry, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah, jumping way ahead, but no, I think those are fair points, and Yeah, basically. So setting the stage for poor senior airman Wetterings getting kidnapped by Apophis.
Yeah.
Slash Teal'c.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is very stoic and just Teal'c about it. It's just funny because you get these close-ups of him like it's supposed to be meaningful, but his face is so impassive that it's hard to tell what he's thinking.
What's funny to me is, like, I had seen, like, GIFs on Tumblr or, like, screenshots of, like, SG-1 together. So I knew Teal'c would eventually switch over and be the good guy. And I really wish that, like, I hadn't known that. So when he does eventually make his switch, I would have been more about it.
Yeah, that would have been a cool moment if you hadn't known. But, yeah, I mean, he's with the team right on, like,
Hulu on the cover, I know.
When you go to click to watch it. So spoilers, it'd be kind of hard to not know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Wettering has a rough time. I mean, she spends the first part of the cold opening being like, hey, guys, I know we're playing poker, and that's really important. Don't get me wrong. But I'm pretty sure the curtain's rippling on this Stargate thing, and I can hear something, and something's not right. And in typical fashion, the dudes are like, sit down, shut up, play a poker game, it's fine. It's just like, could we listen? And then it's just all downhill for poor Wettering from there. It's not good.
It is. It does not go well for her.
Yeah.
All right, so after introducing, I guess, functionally that the Stargate is still functional and that the bad guys are scary, we get to see Jack again.
Yay!
Our new Jack.
Our new Jack. Our better Jack.
Yeah. So, thoughts on Jack, his introduction? I mean, we can talk about the whole thing. I mean, it's not just like that one scene. It's really short. They scoop
him. Yeah, yeah, I was like...
So any of that would be... We don't need super deep thoughts about Jack.
I mean, I do like the headcanon where Jack does like to always look at the stars and the telescope and does efficiently know how to navigate and that he knows most of the constellations. I like that headcanon because...
I think that's canon. That's effectively canon.
Is it a canon?
Yeah.
Except that they. I mean, I think part of it can be that it's Jack's character to really play dumb. Mm-hmm. But there's so many times where, like, when they're on Eudora, right? The 100 Days one.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't see anything. And Sam's like, well, that's because it's not dark yet. Like, Jack didn't know how to see stars in a telescope. Like,
yeah.
And I think we're supposed to just assume that that's him really aggressively playing dumb as he does. But sometimes I felt like the writers forgot that Jack is like an amateur astronomer.
Yeah.
I also liked every time he interacted with someone, there was some sort of sarcastic comment coming out of his mouth at every moment.
The snark is strong with Jack O'Neill with two L's.
Which is great because it just, like, I was just sitting there and I knew it was coming. I've seen this episode multiple times. But, like, I still sit there and I smirk at things that he says. Like, when the airman was like, we have to take one more elevator to go down, he goes, yeah, I know I've been there before. I'm like, oh.
So, in this Illustrated Companion, which if you guys don't know, I'm sure you do, but they have these Illustrated Companions for all of the Stargate seasons. And it's cool, like, little behind-the-scenes information for each episode and kind of, like, character analysis by the actors, that kind of thing. But I thought it was interesting, just so Richard Dean Anderson gave this quote about his initial impressions of Jack. The Jack O'Neill character also intrigued me. He's a man trained to obey orders, but with the need to follow his own moral compass. I thought it would be interesting to draw out his humanity and sense of humor in situations where he's under pressure. And he said that before he took on this role, he wanted to inject the character with many of his own little foibles. He says, I have a very irreverent sense of humor. It's very dry, sarcastic, naughty, and I wanted to give O'Neill that kind of levity. Fortunately, they went along with me. Basically, the whole point was that Anderson was going to do his own thing and, yeah, bring that humor. And it's such a stark difference from the O'Neill that we see in the movie to the new O'Neill that we see now. And it's definitely for the better, I think.
So much so. Well done, Richard Dean Anderson. That was an excellent choice.
It's not the first time our actors will be making some excellent character choices and decisions.
So then Jack meets Hammond, and I love their first meeting. Like such a meeting of wills between these two, because I feel like Hammond gets a read on Jack so quickly. Like, he knows exactly who this guy is and how he operates, and he sees right through him. He knows right off the bat that his report is fudged and that he is full of shit.
Mm-hmm. Like,
there's no question that Hammond knows that he lied on his report. And so I really love that scene. And he kind of dangles Kowalski and Ferretti right in front of him, mm-hmm. like the glasses right there, just to really hammer it home how serious he's being. It's great. Hammond comes out with some power plays, and I think it's pretty awesome.
It's a nice reminder that he's like the general. He's the head dude in charge. Like, there's a reason that he's in the position that he's in, and it's because he does know how to strategize, and he knows. Like, I think sometimes we forget, I think the series kind of undercuts Hammond sometimes, like, in that authority role. And it's nice to see him in that pilot where he's at upfront, in-your-face authority figure. And I think later on, he just becomes, like, the admin support a little bit for SG-1, which, hey, like, I get it. But it was really nice to see him in that authority figure role in the pilot.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get 2 stars for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like Melanie is just waiting in the wings, and she's like, guys, I have 4 pages of notes on this one very particular scene. And at any given moment, I'm going to swoop in and steal the show.
I mean, I have been pretty quiet lately. It's fine.
You want to throw in a mm-hmm?
Well, I mean, speaking of power plays between Hammond and getting a read on Jack, I did appreciate the fact that he basically played chicken with Jack when he, like, brought him into the gate room and showed him that they were going to put another nuke through the gate.
Yeah.
And like Chelsea said, he knows that Jack fudged his report, and he knows eventually Jack is going to be like, no, you can't put the bomb through because they're still alive on their side. And he's just waiting. And I just thought that was great. And then their whole argument that they have about the bomb going through and how there are innocent people over on Abydos and how Jack feels for the Abydonians and things like that shows his humanity and things. I mean, he's right. Jack's right in one respect. But then you also have Hammond, who's thinking about the people here and how, you know, you can't just have this gate open and let, you know, mm-hmm. God knows whoever come through it and, you know, try and take over the world and whatnot. And so I just thought, it was good because Jack was like, well, there's innocent people in Abydos. And then Hammond was just like, well, there's innocent people here.
Yeah.
And that like got through to Jack, and he was like, okay, well, fine. Let me go lead a team to the Stargate and we'll fix the problem.
It's interesting too, because like, we don't have a prime directive at this point. Like, what is the point of this gate? What is the point of the SGC or the SG-1 teams? Like, is it to protect Earth? Is it to explore? Is it to, like, at this point, we're just in like defense mode, I guess.
Well, but I don't even think the SGC actually exists yet. I think it's still just Cheyenne Mountain has this Stargate in the middle of it, and they didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the SGC actually exists until the next episode.
Yeah, and all the NORAD guys make fun of the people who work down with the Stargate. Like, you gonna go babysit the ring again?
Yeah.
They play a great poker game down there on Thursday nights, guys.
I really like those observations about Hammond and Jack. That kind of leads us to the scene with Jack and Kowalski, which is great, but also brings us to the correction that we need to make about our last podcast, where I posited that possibly Jack named his kid Charles or Charlie after Charles Kowalski, and that is absolutely not true, because Kowalski had never even heard of Jack's son. Which I had forgotten, I think maybe because then in the Gamekeeper episode, it shows them in the past. Which maybe that was just in his head, and Kowalski never was on that mission. I don't remember that episode well enough to say. But pretty definitively, we can state that Charlie O'Neill was not named after Charles Kowalski.
Yeah.
I think as we got later on, a lot of things just got retconned.
It was also think we were just desperately searching for a reason for this dumb, arbitrary change. There is no reason. It just is. We have to accept it.
Charlie is a better name than Tyler. That's all I have to say.
Aww, no offense to all the boyfriends. Tylers out there.
If your name is Tyler, I apologize. I'm just saying.
If your name is Tyler, Mel hates you. Sorry. Please change your name to Charlie, then she will be interested. So yeah, so our bad. We will try and make corrections if we say something stupid and then we realize. So, you know, keeping it honest.
All right, so Hammond comes around and realizes that he's not okay with just sending a nuke through to kill a bunch of innocent people and asks Jack what he thinks they should do. And he is all ready to get a super expensive probe to send through. And Jack's like, wait, I have another idea.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. So he sends through the box of tissues. So I guess just like from what we know from the Stargate movie, so the Stargate opens, this box of tissues comes flying out. Are there people hanging around by the Abydos Stargate? Yep, go for it. Mel's raising her hand. Yes, the young lady in the back.
If you remember in the episode, Jack brings that up. And he's kind of like, why are y'all just hanging out by the Stargate? And basically Daniel's like, because we were protecting the Stargate or something to that effect. They were like making sure that people didn't come through the Stargate or something like that. So they're already just chilling there.
He said he had the boys on watch 32 or 36 hours a day, however many days, how many hours.
Really pulling it together.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they saw the tissues and were like, oh, we have to go get Daniel. And so Daniel and Shari decided to come in tent in the little pyramid thing. And then the sandstorm came and that's when they came through the Stargate.
Yeah. Yeah, I would assume that once Daniel got the message, he would be hanging out.
Totally. That part I get. I just meant the initial, like, send through. I didn't remember the line about there just being a 24/7 guard at the Stargate.
It's 36 hours.
Shut up.
Come on, Jess. You say you like Stargate, and I'm getting it right. God.
The look that I'm giving you right now, madam.
Jack's genius tissue box message leads us to one of my favorite examples of his snark that so I'm just going to play the clip.
What if the aliens got him? Well, they could be blowing their noses right now.
It's so great.
I just love it so much because, first of all, Samuel's like, why are you worried about tissue box falling into enemy hands? Like, dude, chill. And second of all, Jack's snark is just next level. It's so awesome.
What Jack didn't know is that tissue box was inscribed with military secrets, so there was a real concern there.
But if they had military secrets, what was Daniel Jackson going to do with those military secrets?
All right, way to kill the joke, Mel. It's a good example that even though Jack's military, and despite what some characters, Daniel, would say, he doesn't always jump for, like, the military answer. Like, it doesn't have to be, let's send the troops through to get a message. Let's send high tech. Let's just good old fashioned, here's a quick and easy screw protocol. This is a good way to communicate.
Yeah, agreed.
He's not your typical military commander.
Yeah, he's not looking to hurt people.
No.
But he does want to protect the people that he's in charge of.
Yeah.
Oh, also, actually, this, just really quick before we move on, when they were waiting for the message back, like, with the tissues, they do, like, very serious waiting montage. I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but it's just, like, people standing around talking.
And they're pushing. And
like, very serious music.
They're super tense, okay, Chelsea? They're waiting for the response.
Like, those people could have been sitting, like, at a dinner party talking. There was nothing intense about what was happening, but it's, like, serious music.
Even Jack said that they could be waiting for a while to get the tissues back. Like, everyone was so serious.
Well, I guess, like, we weren't told, like, how many people who are currently in the SGC were actually part of that original mission. Like, Hammond wasn't part of the original mission, if I remember correctly. So it's, maybe they're all anxious to see it all happen in action.
Maybe. I mean, there was definitely reason for them to be anxious. I just thought that the clips that they chose to use for the serious, anxious waiting was funny.
Guys, it was the 90s. We had different stresses then.
Fair point. All right, so Daniel sends the message back. Send more tissues or send more.
Mm-hmm.
And Hammond gives the go-ahead for Jack to go through the gate. And we get an introduction to the next member of our team.
The best member.
The best.
I think we're biased, guys.
100%.
I'm just going to throw that out there real quick.
So we go to the briefing room, and Jack is getting ready to assemble his team and is informed that he will have a member of his team that he did not choose, who is Captain Sam Carter.
You said that like a porno intro.
Captain Sam Carter. Porno intro.
Although, the way that she and Jack flirt, it may as well be a porno intro. Oh, God.
All right, I have the clip, if you guys want, or not.
Yeah,
I have the clip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's Captain Carter?
Just arriving, sir.
Carter?
I'm assigning Sam Carter to this mission.
I'd prefer to put together my own team, sir.
Not on this mission. Sorry. Carter's our expert on Stargate.
Where's he transferring from?
She is transferring from the Pentagon.
You get it, girl.
Mel and Jess are silently cheering, pumping their fists. She is transferring from the Pentagon.
Yeah, she is.
I love, one of the things that I hadn't remembered about this scene that I love this time around was the respect that Hammond shows for Sam throughout. Like, even when he's just talking about her as, you know, Carter's the foremost expert on the Stargate, you know, going on the mission. And throughout this whole conversation, when Jack and Kowalski and Freddie are kind of being assholes, Hammond is 100% on Sam's side. And so he gets all the bonus points for that.
Mm-hmm. So I saw Captain Marvel. You may have seen it. And it's set in the 90s. And I remember there being a line in the Captain Marvel movies. Hang on, guys. I think I'm going somewhere with this. And they were saying how, like...
I know where you're going with it. Go.
Back in, like, the late 80s, early 90s, because that would be, like, the timeline. So Captain Marvel and Monica say that... No, not Monica. Maria. Say that they weren't allowed to fly. Like, back then, they were still not letting women fly in the Air Force.
They were only test pilots.
They were only test pilots. And so I was thinking about, like, when Sam says that she's logged over 100 hours in enemy space. I mean, I know it's 97, but she's still pretty young. And I was just thinking, like, when? When did this happen? And then, like, when did the Air Force start letting women fly?
Combat.
In combat.
Were Carol and Maria, were they enlisted officers, or were they,
She's captain.
She's captain.
Is she a captain, or?
It says, another of the first American woman to fly in combat in the 90s was Lieutenant Colonel Martha McSally. And she flew more than 100 combat hours. I wonder if Sam's based on this person. I'm looking her up. Hang on. She earned her wings in 91. She was the first female U.S. fighter pilot to fly in combat and the first woman to command a fighter squadron over southern Iraq. 91.
So can we just kind of 95. Agree that, can we just agree that that might be where Sam kind of got that, that's where some of Sam came from?
Yeah. And it is plausible that Sam.
This, basically, long story short, this Martha McSally in 95... She was the first female U.S. fighter pilot to fly in combat. And 95, that's upsetting.
But that was a long time.
Yeah, but that was 95, and this was SG-1's pilot in 97. So I would say that is believable that in 2 years she could have logged 100 fighter hours.
I don't know, though, because Sam's in the Pentagon, and then she's the
expert. That's also true.
She's the expert on the Stargate. It doesn't fit.
I don't want to undercut her credentials, but...
Captain Marvel. Okay, so, but she was the fictional first female Air Force pilot, and it was in 93 instead of 95. So
okay. I was just thinking about it until Captain Marvel came out and they said that, and I was like, the hell do you mean women weren't flying combat in the late 90s or early 90s? I had no idea.
We're not.
We definitely weren't.
Sam Carter was the first. Sam Carter, Carol Danvers, and Maria Rambeau were for sure friends. Like, that's just a fact.
Yeah. Crossing over, baby.
All right. So we've introduced Sam. We've established that she's a woman. And
yes.
I also really appreciate that when Jack goes, "Where's he?" And then all of a sudden she goes, "She." Like, for some reason, baby. That always, like, I always go, "Yeah, cool."
Yeah, Jack, you asked the assumption.
Also, it reminds me a bit of Coulson's introduction in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stepping out of the corner, like, Sam was waiting in the hallway for Sam to say.
Can I go in now, guys? Can I go in now?
She was waiting for someone to assume it was a he, and then she just walked in.
She had it ready to go.
Locked and loaded.
We should all aspire to be like Sam, just lurk around corners and wait to make our entrance.
You might be waiting a long time. I don't know.
What should I say? That people aren't talking about me? All right. So I think, Chelsea, I don't know how much of this you pulled, but this is like, how much did you pull?
I have pretty much the whole thing. So you guys just tell me which ones you want to listen to.
I mean, we could just do all of them.
Okay. So here comes the first one.
But of course you go by Sam.
You don't have to worry, Major. I played with dolls when I was a kid.
G.I. Joe?
Oh, Major Matt Mason.
Oh. Who?
Major Matt Mason, astronaut doll. Do you have that cool little backpack that made him fly?
I love Ferretti so much, you guys.
The whole exchange is just so good.
All right, you guys, like, you're like holding back reactions as we were listening to it. So react verbally now.
It's mostly just... fuck yeah. Like, that whole exchange is just like, oh, the assumption that, like, you must be a lesbian. Like, that's what Kowalski is implying, right? Like, yeah. Oh, G.I. Joe, you go by Sam, and, like, mm-hmm. You're in the military, so you're implying that Sam's a lesbian, and she's, like, this butch, like, feminazi kind of character. And
right. As if that would be a bad thing in the first place.
Right. And on top of that, Sam's like, fuck you and your expectations. I played with science dolls, first of all, okay? And you have nothing to worry about. I'm all, you know, about the men parts. Like,
the men parts? I like that. It's good. It's good.
It leads into her, you know.
Yeah. So I really like the way that Sam, man, and I just keep thinking, like, if I was Sam, like, God knows what she's put up with in her career up until this point. Like, I'm sure it's terrible. But, like, on a lesser note, like, I'm sure we've all experienced degrees of being, like, undercut at work by men or, like, by authority figures who just assume things about you based on us just being a woman. And I wish I had an ounce of what Sam had in that scene sometimes to, like, fight back or, like, snap back at certain people. So I'm over here just cheering her on.
Yeah, well, just to give even an ounce of the sass, I just love the it's just dripping with disdain when she's like, I played with dolls when I was a kid.
And she has her little nose scrunch. I think she's so cute.
I just love Ferretti, though. He's like, Matt Mason, yay!
Matt Mason, like, and he had the little backpack, right? I love that backpack.
You know they totally talked about the Matt Mason doll, like, before they got ready. Like, he was like, I had one, too. Like, hey! Yeah.
Ferretti still has his in the box, and he, like, is going to sell it on eBay one day at the comic book store in mint condition.
So, fun fact, the Matt Mason doll is actually in the flashback in... I guess it's The Devil You Know, when we see childhood Sam, Matt Mason.
With the blood of Sokar?
Mm-hmm.
Such a good detail. One of the rare continuity wins.
Random fact. So my cousin and his wife had a child like a year or two ago, and they named her Sam after Sam Carter they named her Samantha after, you know, Sam in Stargate. And so I found out the other day that one of their friends actually got her a Matt Mason astronaut doll.
That's so cool.
That's amazing.
From like the, you know, like the 70s or whatever. And like, so like they have it in her room. And I was just that is so cool.
So the next clip I'm going to play, there are actually two different, I'm only playing one version of it. But I noticed as I was watching the final cut versus the one that aired, I always thought that it was a little out of place that Sam was like, oh, I think I've been preparing for this all my life. It just felt, because Jack is like, we're going to get you ready to go through the Stargate. And she's like, oh, I've been preparing for this all my life. And it was like, no, chill. Like, let him prep you. You haven't been. And so I thought it was a little weird. And as you get to know Sam, also had a character, because she's very teachable and she wants to pick up new things. But in the final cut, they used a different cut of the line. And when Jack is like, here, I'm going to play it, because
this is the final cut version.
This is the final cut version of that line.
For those of you on your first trip through the gate, you should be prepared for what to expect.
Well, I've practically memorized your report from the first mission, sir. I'd like to think I've been preparing for this all my life.
That sounds like 1,000,000% better than every the same version I've seen like 1,000,000 times.
Right? Like, well, and even visually, Jack is visibly kind of giving her sass in that scene in the final cut. He's like, for those of you who haven't been through the Stargate, and he looks at her. And then she's like, well, I have been trying to prepare. Like, it was more kind of defending herself than just being like, no, I've been preparing all my life. You don't need to tell me anything about going through the Stargate. It was much more kind of defensive. And so I actually really liked the way that they recut that line.
Yeah.
Because it made it make much. Because the first time I saw it, I was like, lady, chill. What's let him talk.
That's like Sam's motto, lady, chill.
Well, I mean, as I rewatched it and watching it again, I was like, dang, can we like settle down a little bit? Like, he's trying to say something, and all of a sudden you're just like yelling at him that you've been preparing for it my whole life. And I get it. I would
play devil's advocate just to say again, like, yes to all those things, and I agree with you, but I would also say, like, Sam's supposed to go through the gate 2 years ago. God knows why she didn't end up going. And again, what she's had to deal with in her career. I mean, like, there's no way to get around it. That's, like, the reason. I mean, and Sam doesn't know Jack. And if it's true that she's read the report from his original mission, that Jack, if we're sticking with canon, is a very different Jack. He was much more by the rules and, like, a strict military guy. And she maybe was expecting that version of Jack and not the version that she ends up getting, which is the more irreverent, not so much respect for military protocol. But all that to say, I totally agree with you. And I like the final cut much better.
I will mention a couple of differences as we go along between the final cut, which is the version Brad Wright recut and edited in 2009 to re-release as it's a standalone movie, kind of functionally. And Jess, I think you had some other information about that too.
Okay, so Donnis Davis, the actor who played Hammond, died in 2008. And as a result of that, and I think also because Stargate Universe was starting up in 2009, Brad Wright wanted to recut the original pilot as a little mini movie. And I think Chelsea kind of touched on this and said that they changed a lot of the things that caused controversy, like some of the nudity scenes. They recut some of the lines. They sharpened and tightened up the editing. But they basically re-released the pilot as a movie to draw fans back in preparation for SGU's release. And there's a really nice dedication at the end of Children of the Gods to Donnis Davis.
Yeah, so I watched all the different versions of, well, that I could find in preparation for this. So I'll point out some of the bigger differences. There are a lot of little things, just recutting scenes, slightly changing lines. They'd clearly redubbed a lot of the lines. They went in and remastered it. It's much cleaner. But other than that, there are some big ones. So starting right here, I mean, we just talked about the one I played, the final cut version, but also they cut some of Sam's lines they cut the Matt Mason line that we already listened to, and they cut the reproductive organs line. So here is the controversial clip that got cut from the final cut. So we're going to listen.
Colonel, I was studying the gate technology for 2 years before Daniel Jackson made it work and before you both went through. I should have gone through then. But sir, you and your men might as well accept the fact that I am going through this time.
Well, with all due respect, Doctor, I would...
It is appropriate to refer to a person by their rank, not their salutation. You should call me Captain, not Doctor.
Captain Carter's assignment to this unit is not an option. It's an order.
I'm an Air Force officer just like you are, Colonel. And just because my reproductive organs are on the inside instead of the outside doesn't mean I can't handle whatever you can handle.
Oh, this has nothing to do with you being a woman. I like women. I've just got a little problem with scientists.
Oh, Colonel, I logged over 100 hours in enemy airspace during the Gulf War. Is that tough enough for you? Or are we going to have to arm wrestle?
God, have sex on the table already. Listen to that, for God's sake. Arm wrestle is code for sex. Do it.
I need you to calm down, okay? We're like on our third episode. I'm going to need you to bring it down a tad.
Never. This is it, the entire series.
I'm going to be honest. The reproductive organs line, I like it, but it still makes me inwardly cringe every single time.
Is it cringe because it's, is it like, why does it make you cringe though?
Because I think that she's almost already kind of proven her badassery, but then she has to like take it like one step further and like be like, you know, just because this is this way, you know, doesn't mean I can't handle what you can't handle. And I'm just like, but why did we have to go there?
Mm-hmm. We've established you don't have a dick, is what we're saying. Got it.
And I think it makes me inwardly cringe because A, I know it's coming, and B, like, just the way she delivers the line, it's great. But mm-hmm. then I'm just like, again, like, why is it there?
No one would really say that.
Exactly.
It's what I think it's like what men think that women want to say. Two dudes in that scenario?
But it's not.
We would be more likely to tell you to go fuck off than they would be like, my uterus is on the inside, your dick's on the outside. Alright.
I am not gonna lie. I have given dudes crap before about how exposed their genitalia is.
Their genitalia? What is this, biology class?
It's slightly more concise to say than reproductive organs.
That is true, but not as concise as saying dick.
Or you could say penis.
No, but it's comparative.
Yeah. Do you like the line, Chelsea, or you hate the line? Where you stand?
I like the line, and here's, I think you guys are both right in that it is sort of the kind of thing that people would think that you might want to say, but no one would ever actually say it in those circumstances. But part of the reason I like it is because it's the kind of over-the-top thing you'd say if you'd psyched yourself out for a moment. And I think that's what we could assume had happened here. So here's Sam Carter, and she is pissed. She got left off of the mission last year. She deserved to go last time. It was absurd that she didn't get to, and she knows that she's about to walk into a room full of dudes that don't want her there. Kowalski and Freddie and Jack already have the rapport of having gone on the last mission together. And so you know, this is Sam Carter. She's like queen of preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know that she was like, I need to prove myself to them. I need to come off tough and ready and prepared. And so she had been psyching herself up. And I just like to think that she went in there, she had this like, she really maintains her confidence. She delivers it with such confidence. And I just like to think that then she went home that night and she's like, I went in that room and I blacked out. What did I say? Did I actually say that? Oh, crap. No.
I do like the idea of her like practicing like in that hallway while she's like awaiting her entrance. She's like, okay. And if they bring up that I'm a girl, here's what I'm going to say. And she's like practicing the different iterations in her head. Like, and then I'm going to tell them that my reproductive organs are on my inside and theirs on their outside, but I can arm wrestle with the best of them. And she's like out there like doing like the Rocky boxing motion. Like, I got this, coach.
So the thing is, I don't think she actually would have prepared to say that. She probably had thought that she was going to make a dick joke. She was going to say something much more aggressive. And then instead, she like defaulted back to scientists.
Oh, I love that. I love the idea that she wanted to make a dick joke, but couldn't bring herself to not say reproductive organs.
I love that.
Yeah, I think the line is, it's fine. I know Amanda Tapping really hated it, and that's what like made her want to go talk to the writers and producers and be like, hey guys, you may want to bring some ladies into your writing room, because this ain't how we talk. So I appreciate that like Amanda Tapping didn't like the line, and I think ultimately I appreciate that it got cut from the final cut, because I do think it doesn't match up with the character that we ultimately get after the first 5 or 6 episodes, when the characterization really starts settling down. I'm glad they cut it out, but I still fist pump every time I hear it.
Well, and if you cut it out, though, you lose the other joking references they make to it later on in the series.
Yes.
Like yes, in Mobius, that, when she yes. is trying to psych herself up to tell her boss off. She's like, who would say that?
Or in the 200th episode, when it's like the puppet Sam does the Sam line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, there is a problem with the way that it's cut together in the final cut, is that because she doesn't really bring it back to her being a woman, then when Jack says, this isn't about you being a woman, when he says, I like women, mm-hmm. it comes off so much more lecherous and gross, because it's like, dude, why'd you go there? That's weird. Because it's not in response to her being so defensive about being a woman. And he's like, no, I like women. It's about you being a scientist. Instead, it just sounds like, no, I like women.
Also, so can we address creepy. The fact that he does emphasize it a certain way? It's not, I like women. It's, oh, I like women. Like, can we address? Okay, I'm so glad we're here. Weird, what a weird segue that we found ourselves in. Let's talk about the way Sam and Jack are talking to each other in our first meeting. Too soon?
No. I honestly,
mm-hmm.
they're mm-hmm. flirting.
Like, oh, yeah.
I am a terrible flirt. I'm bad at knowing when people are flirting with me. But even I was like, dude, you guys, there's like a room full of Air Force officers.
And you just met. Like, I get like people who, like, whatever. If you don't want to ship them, fine. Don't ship them. You're wrong, but don't ship them. But look at the first meeting. There is so much chemistry there. And she literally challenges him to an arm wrestle. Fam, come on.
And he entertains the idea.
He does.
For like a good couple seconds. And then they're like, hey guys, we need to get back to what the real story is going on right now.
There's a lot of smoldering looks and smirking. And yeah, it's, they want to fuck, okay?
He absolutely would have taken her up on the arm wrestling challenge if Samuels hadn't coughed and interrupted me.
It's another strike against Samuels.
His, like, they center in on his face, and his lips kind of quirking up a little bit into a smile. They're definitely flirting.
Well, I think the quirk could have almost been like an amused kind of a smirk, kind of like, oh, hey, like, she actually does, you know, kind of might fit in with us guys, like, you know.
I think he was pleased. Yeah, I think he was like, okay, she can be on the team.
Like she's one of the guys, but just that she can hang, like she's not some stuck up Pentagon scientist. She can get rid of the military protocol when she needs to.
I wanted to point out though, because then we get another moment of Jack's snark. I actually didn't pull this one because it's just when Samuels is like, we shouldn't be going back and this is too dangerous, and Jack gives his Mr. Glass half empty over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts to Sam, and she's already smirking at Jack's snark. It's just like, she was just at odds with him, and now he's snarking at Samuels, and she's just smirking. She's amused already.
I mean, she's already doing her classic, like, oh, I'm smiling at you, but you can't see me smiling at you, so I'm going to look down mm-hmm. and hope that you don't see me smile / smirk at you, okay?
Or she wants to maintain the facade that she is a serious military person and Jack's insubordination is not at all amusing to her, but it totally is.
I love them.
All right, yeah, so now they're going to Abydos. And so another thing that changed in the final cut is they cut the line when they're getting ready to go through the gate. They cut that interaction between
aww.
Them, which I thought
was sad. Bad decision. It's because there was too much chemistry and heat in that first one. I'm just saying, they wanted to tone it down.
I mean, it was a little late in 2009 to tone down the chemistry between Richard Dean Anderson and Amanda Tapping. That boat had sailed. All right, so I'm gonna play the clip that they mistakenly cut.
Captain?
Don't worry, Colonel. I won't let you down.
Good. I was gonna say ladies first.
You know, you really will like me when you get to know me.
Oh, I adore you already, Captain.
Guys!
And then he pushes her through the Stargate, and it's amazing.
So cute.
Okay, but her whole, like, amazement at the Stargate was, like, the cutest thing.
Yes!
Okay. Like, and then y'all, she started talking about all her science jargon, and I was like, oh, you're so cute.
When she says, I think she says it's astronomical to use exactly the right word. I was like, yes. You have my heart, you have my soul, you have my loyalty. What else would you like from me, Samantha Carter? You got me.
She's such an adorable little geek. And
yes.
Which is like, I was going to say, which is such a contrast to who we met in the beginning. Like, hard ass, want to make sure I'm, like, one of the dudes, want to make sure that I can, show you that I can be one of the dudes, so you can trust me, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden we cut to the next scene, and she's, like, this super science geek who's, like, constantly amazed with whatever she comes into contact with. And, yeah.
Yes, no, I totally agree. She's, like, a soft, gooby center.
When we finally get to Abydos, and she gets to, like, super geek and, like, not have to have this, like, hard shell around her. And she can just be, like, super soft and just be like, this is amazing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I like that Jack and Ferretti soften on her so quickly because it does let her her guard down a bit. Kowalski takes a little longer. Yeah, so then we're on Abydos.
Yay!
And we get the reunions, which are fun. I love that. So, everyone's guns are up and everyone's freaking out. And Daniel jumps in and is like, stop. And then he and Jack kind of lock eyes, and Jack walks right past him to go say hi to Skara. it's really funny, and Daniel gives him this look, and then he kind of smiles when he sees him reuniting with Skara.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was really funny. They kind of play that up, and he just blows right past Daniel.
I thought it was interesting. In the Illustrated Companion, they refer to Skara as Jack's adopted son, which I thought was really strong language. I mean, I guess we can count this as canon because it's the official Stargate companion. But I thought that was, like, really strong for, like, what we actually saw interaction-wise in the movie versus, I don't know, adopted son just seemed strong.
Well, I mean, I would agree with that as we move on in Children of the Gods because, I mean, we see that they have a relationship. I'm going to jump forward here for a second, but when Skara gets, taken by Apophis, Jack is visibly, shaken by that. And when he comes and tells Hammond, hey, one of our kids got taken, and Hammond's kind of like, what are you talking about? And Jack's like, Skara, like the kid that, is on Abydos.
I just thought it was interesting that the phrasing was just like adopted son, just because based off of the movie that we saw last week, I don't know if I would have gotten there. They had like one scene together.
I mean, you're that's not true. Wrong.
I mean,
I think it's interesting they refer to him as the adopted son because isn't Kasuf his dad? I thought he had a dad.
Yes,
Kasuf is his dad.
So we get the reunions between all the people in the gate room on Abydos, and we get Sam and Daniel meeting for the first time, which is adorable and I love. And in the final cut, there are actually a couple more shots of Sam approaching the DHD and sort of investigating it before she starts verbally geeking out about it, and it's awesome.
This is how they controlled it. It took us 15 years and 3 supercomputers to MacGyver a system for the gate on Earth.
So great.
And the reaction shot that they do of Jack after she says MacGyver.
Great.
It's great. I can't, and they change it.
Yeah,
in the
they
final
change
cut.
It to jerry-rigged. Jerry-rigged?
Jerry-rigged, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Maybe, like, copyright rights? I don't know.
I mean, maybe they just didn't like the MacGyver line, because I'm pretty... Didn't Amanda Tapping, didn't she... She, ad-libbed that, I believe, if that's correct.
Oh, no, you're right, damn it.
Ha! Okay, so, yeah.
She Amanda, ad-libbed it?
She ad-libbed it.
I love it.
Boom. Because, I mean, it didn't fit, and so I guess, Jerry Rigged would fit better, but I do like MacGyver way better.
So I guess it makes sense that they cut it, because they can't have MacGyver in the same universe as SG-1.
I guess so, but I like it. I really like it.
I like it too.
So yeah, so they eat their dinner and then they go to what I like to call the super convenient magical address book.
And then Sam and Daniel geek out. And it's honestly the, like, one of the cutest things I've ever seen. Because, like, they just feed off each other's geekiness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, I might have watched that scene, like, 3 times.
So when they first get to the cartouche, the temple place with all of the addresses, then this is what Daniel says, and I love it.
Captain Doctor, you're gonna love this.
Captain I love Doctor. That he calls her Captain Doctor. And they take it out in the final cut, and it's so cute and playful, and...
I kind of wonder if it's because, like, I noticed on my rewatch, first of all, the chemistry between everybody is just, like, off the charts good. Like, they cast this show so, so well. Everyone's got good chemistry. But I didn't realize how much, not sexual chemistry, but just really good energy chemistry Daniel and Sam had in that first episode. And it was a lot of, like, total science bros, really, really, like, good play off of each other. Like, I would watch, hands down, Sam and Daniel traversing the galaxy, just geeking out over all the science-y things together. And I forgot how good that chemistry was just because of my later feelings towards Daniel. But it's such a good glimpse into this team dynamic.
Melanie, you're shaking your head, but you told me to pull the clip.
I did, but no. It was her saying that she would watch a show about Sam and Daniel traversing the galaxy together being science bros.
If it was season no, one, Daniel, I would. And Jack's there, too.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually think the chemistry is really great and off the charts. And I believe that all of them, so Christopher Judge, Michael Shanks, and Amanda Tapping have all talked about how the three of them gravitated towards each other at the auditions when they were whittling down the final people for those three roles, and that they just kind of naturally gravitated towards each other and liked each other and had really great chemistry with each other. So it just seems like they had that, those three actors from the get-go, even before they started filming, they already were kind of tight and had that
totally
camaraderie. So yeah, so now we're gonna listen to Sam and Daniel just geeking out.
Look, I don't pretend to know anything about astrophysics, but couldn't the planets change? I mean, drift apart or something like that to throw this map off?
I knew I'd like you.
You mean I'm right?
According to the expanding universe model, all bodies in the universe are constantly moving further apart.
So in the thousands of years since the Stargate was built,
all the coordinates could have changed.
But why does it still work between Abydos and Earth?
Well, Abydos is probably the closest planet in the network to Earth. I mean, the closer they are, the less the difference in relative position due to expansion. The further away, the greater the difference. In a few thousand more years, it won't work between Earth and Abydos either.
Unless you can adjust for the displacement.
Right. Now, with this map as a base, that should be easy. All we have to do is correct for Doppler shift. Then I should be able to arrive at a computer model that will predict the adjustments necessary to get the gate working again.
Okay, so what did we just figure out?
Any civilization advanced enough to build this gate network would be able to compensate for 50,000 years of stellar drift.
So the Stargate can go other places.
The aliens could have come from anywhere.
Oh, Jack.
So
I love Sam. Okay, thanks.
So great. She's so excited.
She is so excited. So this scene bothers me because I don't understand why Daniel can just, like, willy-nilly throw out random theory.
Yeah.
And Sam, the astrophysicist, had never thought about stellar drift contributing yes. to this.
Especially because, like, as someone who, I have no real science background, like, I'm in the more medical field, but, like, even I know that, like, planets drift apart. Like, come on, she's a fucking astrophysicist, and you're not telling me that she's looking at this and being like, hey, guys, the planets drift, so... Like, why is it Daniel? Fuck Daniel. I'm back on fucking Daniel.
It's a dude, and we're in the 90s, and we have to be told how things work.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, I do at least like how this scene plays out, because he really is just throwing it out as like, yeah, I don't know, maybe. And she's like, oh yeah, you're right. And I do love that her response to it, instead of being like threatened by him or upset, is just to be like, oh, I knew I was going to like yeah. you. And that it sort of establishes we're going to work together to to figure things out, and it's not going to have to be adversarial between them. So totally. I do like that it establishes that, but I still can't ever watch that scene without it being like, this sounds like if my husband came home from work and I was like, well, what if the baby's heart is like broken in half? And he'd be like, you're right.
I mean, okay, so I did ask you to pull that clip, but I asked you to pull that clip because I just like, again, how they basically feed off each other's geekiness, mm-hmm. even though Daniel has no basis to know that information at all. But, I mean, like it starts off kind of cool, kind of collected, and then, like, as they keep going and going, like, they keep kind of getting higher and, like, more, like, excited, and yeah.
And I like that Jack's just like, can I get the Cliff Notes summary, please? So the Stargate can go other places? Yes, Jack, the Stargate can go other places.
The aliens could come from anywhere.
I love how she sounds so excited about it when really that's terrifying.
Sam's like, finally, all my sci-fi dreams are coming true.
You can go so many places, guys.
And it's like, no, Sam, that's scary. This is scary. Okay, before we move on from this scene, there's something I wanted to talk about that's always bothered me here. And maybe you guys can give me an explanation for this. So I already think that the room of all the addresses is like kind of magical and ridiculous and silly anyway, but it didn't look like, at least when you get the shots of it. So it's groups of seven. You don't need seven for an address. You need six on your point of origin. So if you were listing addresses, you wouldn't list the seventh symbol. And so even if they're all Abydonian addresses, so they all have the Abydos point of origin at the end. Okay. As far as I could tell, none of those symbols were on the gate. When they're panning across it, they're all Egyptian hieroglyphs. None of them look like the little constellation symbols that are on the gate.
Maybe the hieroglyphs translate into this.
It's possible.
I mean, maybe, except Daniel says specifically all of these symbols are on the gate.
It's true. And they are not. He did.
I think I read this goof somewhere else, and apparently the goof also translates to, like, if you look at your cover of your DVD boxes, the gate also doesn't have the right symbols either. It's got the hieroglyphs on the gate on the DVD boxes.
Oh, really?
I think maybe it was, like, an aesthetic choice or something. I don't know. But, I think it's definitely a goof.
I mean, it does look cool. But then the other thing that doesn't make sense is that Daniel says he had tried to dial some of those addresses and it didn't work because of the stellar drift. And I know it's much later that we learned that the DHDs automatically update to compensate for things like stellar drift. But even just in the context of this episode, how would they get home from Chulak if the DHDs don't automatically compensate for stellar drift?
Unless they do, and Abydos has just been cut off because, like, there's a severed connection somewhere, maybe. I don't know. Or Daniel's an idiot and didn't dial it right.
Okay, yeah, no, that's plausible. while they're in the cartouche room, Apophis shows up at the back of the gate room and wrecks everything.
Yes, that is true.
I mean, yes, there's not that much to say.
No, he basically fucks shit up. He takes Shara away, and then the Skara get taken too. I can't remember. Okay, so Skara gets taken too. So they both get taken.
Teal'c grabs no.
Yeah, Teal'c grabs Skara.
Yeah.
Teal'c grabs Skara.
So Teal'c is still a bad guy.
Yeah. He's a questioning bad guy.
He specifically picks Skara, brings him to Apophis, and Apophis is like, good choice, Teal'c. Well done.
A+ prime.
And then the team comes back too late, obviously. And then a whole bunch of people die.
Ferretti is in critical condition. But guys, don't worry.
He has a photographic memory.
Okay. He held on to consciousness just long enough
to watch them dial out and then memorize on this completely foreign DHD where they went.
Uh-huh. I mean, if you can have an idea of what the symbol looks like, it shouldn't be that hard to figure out.
But then they bring him back to the SGC, ostensibly drug him up because he's been fucking shot, and then he comes out of being on anesthetic, I can only imagine, or heavy painkillers, and still manages to pull through and describe these random symbols.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, you're right. What am I saying? Yeah, that's legit.
So there's a chance that they took a picture of the DHD and he remembered, like, I'd be more likely to be like, oh yeah, then he moved his, he put his hand here and up there.
I mean, but
like a point in seeing kindergarten.
But I mean, I've come out of anesthesia, and I mean, let's just say I haven't. I don't remember what I said, so there's no way I could have been like, "Hey, I saw them press G H F T R." No, there's no way.
Yeah,
no way.
No, for Eddie is,
but it's very convenient that he could.
I mean, at least they established that he did see it.
Yeah, that's true. But don't let the facts get in the way of a good story, guys. Let's keep moving it.
Yeah, you're so right. All right.
So then the team goes back with Daniel and injured Ferretti, and the Iris is now on the Stargate. Just kind of, they installed it apparently in the under 24 hours that the Stargate, that the team was on Abydos.
Hey, Jess.
Yeah.
Close the Iris.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm going to be bringing that up later when we close. I'm going to bring it up every single episode until you guys cave. I just want you to know that.
No, but this is the first time Samuels. Bit. So this is the first time it's said. Samuels comes running into the room. Close the Iris. Close the Iris. So on Hulu, that's the end of part one, is the team coming back through the Stargate.
The good news is the second part, it's a lot of like, okay, we are 3/4 of the way to forming SG-1. We now are going to go rescue Sharae and Skara. Like, there is a clear goal and objective. Okay, you can say rescue in air quotes, yes. yes. They did their best, okay?
Well, so yeah, so then we see Apophis again, and they're rejecting Wetterings as the host.
I will say two things. One, they do a fantastic job of establishing what the hell a Goa'uld is, what a symbiote is, how they work host-wise. I think, like, it's very clear what's happening, like, in a quick little shot. Like, understanding why these hosts are being grabbed. It's a very clear visualization of the symbiote being passed and, like, inspecting. So I like that a lot. And then I was going to say, secondly, whereas I said that the visual effects in the movie really hold up, the visual effects of the symbiote in the pilot don't really hold up. It looks like a 90s video game. Like,
it was almost a puppet. It's like a puppet.
There's two. So there's almost two effects on it. One of them looks like a 90s video game, and one is like a physical gag, like a puppet looking thing, like when they're doing like the close-ups, you know, but like from the far away ones, it's like a terrible looking visual effect.
I must have missed that
visual. Well, because it's not one. In the one with the there's it's when there's the nudity, because it's on the wider shots where it's showing the snakes creeping up the body.
I would
say that one thing I thought that they did a good job of is they kept it pretty consistent that the Amanet, the Goa'uld that's looking for a host, looks different than the one we later see in Teal'c's belly and the one that comes out of the Jaffa and jumps into Kowalski, which is actually consistent with the fact that they are less mature Goa'uld. And I thought that was really impressive for the pilot to have already established that the more mature larval Goa'uld will look different than the baby ones, the new ones.
They do a good job. I mean, like I said, like the mythos and like the establishment is just really, really excellent. Like, we've got our good guy objective, and now we have our bad guy objective, which is to take over the world and keep having hosts.
Yeah. So the poor Wettering gets killed, and then we just go right back to the SGC.
Yeah.
And we get the briefing room, and it's very exciting because in that meeting is where SG-1 gets officially formed. This is where Hammond says we're forming 9 teams, and Jack's going to be in charge of one, and Kowalski's going to be in charge of one. It's a super exciting moment for the show.
And for us.
And for us.
Yes. And then Daniel says that he wants to be on the team. And then Hammond says that he's too important to be on the team because of his knowledge and languages and cultures. And I'm just kind of like, but Sam's not more important to not let her go to the Stargate?
Yeah, and it's not like Daniel is the only person in the entire world who, like, knows how to speak multiple languages and can interpret hieroglyphs. Like, he's the only one who has off-world experience, but, like, now
he's
everyone
not
else
military-trained, though, so he's more of a liability in the field.
That will make it more important.
He hasn't logged 100 hours of in enemy
Neither
airspace.
Has Sam.
Yes.
Believe me, Chelsea, I will bring up Daniel later. Don't worry. I don't know. Sam's the most expert person on the Stargate. She's an astrophysicist. She's probably the smartest person in the military right now. I just have a big problem with Hammond being like, well, Daniel, you're just way important to not let you go through the Stargate. But we're going to let Sam go through the Stargate, because it's not a problem.
Because if she dies, we're cool. Like, it's fine.
I like to think that it's because they already fought that battle. Like, Sam was already pissed she didn't go last time, and so he's already had this argument with her, and now he has to have it with Daniel, and he loses both times, and they both end up going.
Okay. I feel like if they had that argument...
It's a dumb line.
Yeah. Oh, so another thing that got left out of the final cut is before the briefing, Jack takes Daniel home with him and they have a scene. And it's kind of a longer scene that they cut where Daniel kind of talks about his life on Abydos, and there's some sweet moments where he talks about how Sharae kept him grounded because they all wanted to worship him like a god. And then it gives us this moment, which I can't believe they cut it because it's a pretty important character moment.
Daniel, for crying out loud, you've had one beer. A cheaper date than my wife was.
Yes, when am I going to meet your wife?
Oh, probably never. After I came back from Abydos the first time, she was already left.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so was I. I think in her heart, she forgave me for what happened to our kid. She just couldn't forget.
And what about you?
I'm the opposite. I'll never forgive myself. But sometimes I can forget.
It's so sad.
It's very sad. And it's important to establishing where Jack is now.
Yeah, and the friendship between those two and kind of the fire they've been through together, especially because now Jack has also been witness to Daniel's darkest moment and is being a friend to Daniel in the immediate aftermath of Daniel losing his wife.
And it's also like they're friends, but they're not like BFF. They literally went on one mission together.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. So we have the briefing room trying to establish the Stargate teams, and then, so there's this great moment where they're going around, they're discussing the formation of the teams, whether or not it's wise to send people through. And, you know, there's arguments for and against. And basically Hammond says the president agrees with Sam. We're forming these teams. But then they get a note that comes in and Samuel says that Ferretti woke up. And there's this great moment that really establishes the different boundaries of these people. Jack just jumps up and runs out of the room, and everyone else turns and looks at the general, and Sam and Kowalski are both like gripping the table, and then the general says dismissed, and everyone else gets up. Sam and Kowalski are the first ones to jump up and run out of the room. But I think it's this great moment that sort of establishes like Jack doesn't give a shit about protocol. He's up and out. But that Kowalski and Sam, they care about protocol, but they're also like really on edge and ready to go. And it's a great little scene that's all visual. I would have pulled a clip for it, but it's kind of establishing those different dynamics between those people.
Mm-hmm. Did not take my too late. Okay, so then
they introduced the GDOs, which is important.
Yes.
Samuels mentions the GDOs, and then we're off to Chulak, which is either a planet or a city. They sort of treat it like a city here, but then in the future, Chulak is a planet.
Oh, hang on. That brings up Dumb Dumb Daniel part one. Okay, thank you. No. Hold on. This is important to me. Okay. So they get to the planet, right? And Sam and Jack are doing their military stuff, and they're with Daniel. And they see those little priest guys. I don't know what they are, but the little priest guys. And, you know, Jack's like, okay, let's just hang on for a second. Daniel's like, no, I got this. I'm going to go out in the middle of these people and just go talk to them because that's cool. Cool. Let's do that. That's a great idea.
Well, Melanie, all planets are super friendly.
So we just bypass what Jack said and we're just going to go Do whatever the hell you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so since it's my job to defend Daniel, in the final cut, they actually had cut a line. No, they had cut a line. When they see the priest coming up, Jack turns to Sam and he says, "Do you see any weapons?" And Sam says, "No, there's no weapons." And then Daniel says, "They're priests." And then he goes out to talk to them. And so that establishes that he's not just like, "I'm gonna run and talk to the random strangers," that they have first established that they are probably peaceful people that he can approach.
But for all of us who didn't watch the final cut.
What I'm saying, Brad Wright fixed it. Or that's how it was initially, because those lines are, it doesn't look like they're just voice dubbed over. They must have gotten cut from the original airing.
It got retconned. Okay, so fine. Well, it's a stalemate. We'll stalemate that one. Okay.
But it does give us, well, there was a for crying out loud on the clip about the beer, but then it gives us Jack's next for original for crying out loud when Daniel goes running into danger. So I'll probably make a collection, and at some point we'll just play Jack's for crying out loud.
That'd be so great. So then the priests take them
to Chulak,
which is a city apparently, and they go and have a feast because they're going to choose, but no one knows what they're going to choose. And then that brings me to Daniel Dum Dum Part 2. Which is like, Apophis and Shari show up. And I mean, Daniel, my dude, come on, man. Like, she's obviously not the same person, but I'm going to stand up and yell your name anyway and see what happens. Even though we already know that Apophis is probably going to beat shit at everybody. He just doesn't think before he does things, and it just really infuriates everything inside of me.
That's true. He's a very emotional person in the way that he processes things and behaves.
I'll give Daniel a pass on this one, because it's his wife, and you want to hope out for the best that maybe there's, against all odds, she's in there somewhere. So I'll give Daniel a pass on that.
Something that host survives.
But this is really the first experience that anyone on the team has with knowing a host before and after being implanted. Like, this is a new experience. So yeah, Shari's acting weird, but he doesn't know if she's standing there weird under duress or what exactly happened to her.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm giving Daniel a pass on this one.
It's okay. I have another one for later. It's fine.
Okay, but it does cause problems, and SG-1 gets thrown into a prison, and then Daniel comes to, and Sam says he's been out for hours, which he has a very severe head injury. This is a major problem. If you lose consciousness for hours, please see a doctor.
Medical advice here from our podcast.
They meet up with Skara in the prison.
Yep.
And then...
So this is actually a key moment. They meet up with Skara, and then Teok comes in, and when Jack's moving his arms, he grabs it, and he sees this watch, and he goes, "What is this? This isn't Goa'uld technology. Where did you get it? Where are you from?" And Daniel draws the symbol for Earth in the dirt. So that's our first kind of... I mean, we've been getting glimpses of Teok's face, and he seems at least mildly disapproving of Apophis's behavior. But this is the first real glimpse we get of something's up with this guard guy. Like, he's showing an interest in our team.
And then they bring in Apophis and his other system lords, which they're not system lords yet because we don't know that those exist yet. But that's fine. And they come and choose their children out of the group of people that are in the prison. And that brings me to Dum Dum Daniel Part 3. I'm just going to go out there and say it. It's Daniel's fault that Scar got taken, and so I'm just going to throw that out there real quick, because Jack was like, "Daniel, you know, Shari is gone, you know, just play it cool, we'll try and get her another time," like, even he was telling Scar that, you know, "So everybody calm down, we'll get through this part, and then we'll try and find her another way," and... Daniel didn't like that, and so when the system lord bro came up in front of him, he immediately moved, and Daniel was like, "Something of this host has to survive," And that brought to attention Skara, and then Apophis was like, I'm taking Skara as my child, and then Skara got taken.
So it's Daniel's fault.
I'm not going to give you that one.
I'm not giving that one either, and I hate Daniel, but I'm not giving you that one.
Yep.
I will say Daniel...
No, he brought the attention to them. If he hadn't brought the attention to them, Skara wouldn't have got taken.
No, we don't know that, one. And two, if it's Daniel's fault, it's way more Teal'c's fault. So much more Teal'c's fault.
Yeah.
Teal'c chose him and dragged him through the Stargate.
Yeah, I'm gonna give this one to Chelsea here. That's fine. But
you're not wrong that Daniel frequently, Jack is trying to control the situation, just be like, keep your head down, which, can we all just remember that Jack has experience being in a POW situation, like, knows how to handle himself, and Daniel's like, balls to the wall, gonna do what Daniel's gonna do and screw anyone else. So that is obnoxious, but I don't think that he's not responsible for Skara being... go all did.
We can all agree and disagree. That's fine.
Majority rules on this one.
It's fine.
But yeah, so Skara gets taken and implanted.
Yeah, and then Apophis says to kill the rest, and panic ensues, and Jack and Teal'c just have this bro moment across the room. Sup, dude? And Jack's like, I can save these people. And Teal'c believes him. And thus, a bromance was born.
I like that moment for two reasons. One, it's because it shows Jack can read people. Jack saw that wavering disbelief, could see that Teal'c wasn't like everyone else, and that he was someone to, like, a weak spot in some ways to press on to get what he needed. And then also, like, this is just two soldiers in battle, and they understand, like, this is a situation where, like, loyalties are... dropped while we fight our way out of this, and we'll deal with everything else once the dust settles, but for now we're gonna like join arms and get out of here and get these people to safety.
Yeah, I think it's a great that they both kind of had that. They can read each other as warriors. It's very subtle, and there are a couple of moments, so between the watch, and then there's like a nod or two that they share during the choosing, where that basically convinces Jack to kneel down when the choosing is first happening, because this is Jack, like, he never kneels.
Yeah.
He doesn't kneel, and he looks at Teal'c, and Teal'c gives him a very subtle Teal'c nod, and that's when Jack kneels and pulls Skara down with him.
Yeah, it's good. And I will say, so that's like the best part, and then we have the world's longest fight shoot scene. Man, I don't know if they were just crunched for like dialogue and action, but the time that they actually escape from the prison to getting through the Stargate, it is the longest. Jaffa blasting the staff people and nothing happens. No one gets hit. No one of importance gets hit. It's just like, all we establish is that Skara is gone, because Skara just has a little hand gesture at Jack and like is okay. Skara is a host, but it is like a 8 or 9 minute shooting scene, a la Stormtroopers. No one's hitting anything, and it drags. Like, you can just, guys, if you're watching for the first time, just fast forward the last like 10 minutes of that whole fight scene, because nothing fucking happens. I hate it. I'm so annoyed at it.
Well, my favorite part was like Sam was like, "We have to get out of here now. We're like, there's like no cover or something like that."
Yeah,
and I was like, "But we're sitting here for like 9 more minutes."
I know.
What is happening?
And like Daniel's like frantically trying to dial out on the DHD. He's like, doesn't he have like the Earth address or something, like
it's written down
on a piece of paper?
Memorize the address, Daniel.
It's like fucking Ferretti was bleeding out and dying and could remember it, and Daniel can't remember it like under a little whatever. It's a kind of excruciating scene towards the end to watch. It's just like, okay, this could be cut by both.
To be fair though, there weren't that many Jaffa, and then they only had one glider, which Kowalski took out.
It wasn't Kowalski, it was Warrant. It was
okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Someone took it out with one bazooka.
It just goes on forever. And for there not being very many Jaffa, it sure does take this trained U.S. Army, Marine, Air Force mashup team a long time to take them out. Like, It's just, it's not a...
Well, they didn't even take him out.
I know. We were just trying to leave. Just laying down fire.
I know. A whole other battalion. Like, then more and more and more Jaffa show up as they're finally escaping.
Yes. It goes on very long.
Much like this tangent.
So, there were actually a couple of lines that were... that must have been taken out for the original there in the final cut. There's one that's when they're still in the prison that's great, because Jack tells Sam that she might need to destroy the GDO because they can't let it fall into enemy hands. And
I didn't know that existed.
Here, I'll play it.
What? I need to buy this so I can watch it one time.
So here's that conversation.
You still got that transmitter?
Yeah.
All right, we might have to destroy it. If we can't find a way out of here, the mission's a bust anyway, and we don't want a pockhead or whatever his name is to get his hands on that thing.
Boy, he still wouldn't know the code. There's 500 million permutations.
Don't take this personally, but they're way smarter than we are.
Oh, my nerd.
Can we take a shot every time Sam says permutation?
They're way smarter than
we are. He doesn't know Sam yet. He doesn't know how smart she is.
No.
Oh, and then in the escape, we also get this very great and important moment.
I have nowhere to go.
For this, you can stay at my place. Let's go.
Yes. I love it.
I love it. One of the comments I made about this was that Jack and Teal'c decided to overthrow a god together based on a G-Shock watch and a little bro nod. And I just love it so much.
Yeah. Well, it's also like Teal'c is turning his back on, I mean, that's a huge thing. You're walking away from your city, planet, whatever it is, your race, your job, your family, which we find out later, and his religion, his faith. And he takes it on the word of this random guy who says, hey, I got your back and I'm going to go to bat for you. Like, I got you. Come on. Like, ugh. Yeah. That's some serious friendship goals.
All right. So then one other thing that got pulled from the final cut that is while they're meandering to the gate is, and I don't know why this got cut, Sam asks Teal'c why he left.
Why did you do this?
Begoa'uld are conquerors. Nothing more. Not worthy of worship or sacrifice. You are the first to come along with powers that approach theirs.
Powers?
You are strong. Perhaps strong enough to destroy them.
That should have been left in for, like, a million reasons.
I would say it should have been left in, but we also, because we get the enemy within on the next episode, and we get a lot of Jack Teal'c and Teal'c talking to, I think it gets addressed enough. I could see why they cut it, but it makes more sense to have it.
Well,
right there.
To me, I think the part of the reason you need it is because Jack comes bursting through the Stargate after Teal'c, and Hammond is like, what the heck, who is this guy? And Jack is like, ride or die for Teal'c immediately.
Yeah.
He saved my life and I want him on SG-1 and there's no argument about it. And it's like, but you haven't even talked to him. Like, yeah, he saved your life and he helped you up. Do you know what his motivations are? Like, why did he just bail? How do we know he's not a spy? And so I feel like it would help inform that a little bit to be like, oh no, they had a conversation and no, it makes sense. Teal'c makes sense.
Yeah, I also just feel like that's just showing that Jack, like, for Jack, there is no other, like, there is no greater, like, showing of loyalty than, like, I'm going to lay down my life for you. I'm going to put, like, my life on the line for you. And that is enough for Jack. That's enough to say, like, okay, like, I can see what you've done here. So I'm not mad at it just because I know what we're getting in the third episode. Technically the second episode.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I think you're right. I do like how we just get more of a snapshot of Jack's decision-making there. But I do also really like the way that Teal'c expresses that, because he doesn't express it that succinctly that I can think of again in the rest of the show. Like, he'll say parts of that, but that's the most succinctly he ever describes it. I think there could be. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much to the end of the episode. Oh, they do the claymores. Oh, and Jack says he's going to be the last one through because it's Jack and that's what he does. Like, so.
Yeah, and he's the commander. He's the CEO.
He's legit almost the last person out of the gate, like, every single time. Mm-hmm. Except for the occasional time Teal'c is, which is very rare.
Yeah, which I like.
Because he's always kind of like, you know, my team has to make it home.
I like that we're ending this scene or ending the show with the newly formed, hey, here's SG-1. Here they are silhouetted in the Stargate. This is them. And then we get that like compounded because that's just them rough, like straight out. But at the end of Enemy Within, which I cannot wait to get to, but them walking through the Stargate is such a nice, like, this is them coming in and then they get to go out together in the next episode. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's great that they do the final shot with them framed in the Stargate. And then they walk away and Kowalski's there and you get the reveal.
Like a little Kowalski, glowing eyes.
Yep. Yeah, so that's what happened in this episode.
Thanks, guys. That's what happened. So,
all right. So we made it through the whole episode. Let's go ahead and rate the episode out of 7 chevrons. Jess, how did this one stack up for you?
I'm going to give it 6 out of 7. It is highly rewatchable. It's got a great cold open. And I think it does one of the best jobs of any pilot of establishing precedent in the previous movie, the objectives of the bad guys, the objectives of the good guys, and establishing characterization. So I give it 6 out of 7.
I am also going to give it 6 out of 7, but it's because I remember the first time I watched it, like fully through the first time, I thought it dragged. I hated it. I honestly did not like the pilot at all. Did not like. And then I watched it a couple months ago, and I was like, I'm an idiot. This is great. And then I rewatched it again the other day. And it still held up. You know, I thought everyone's exchanges were good. I thought that the chemistry between everyone was off the charts. I just, overall, it was just really good. Yeah.
Chels? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually give it 6 out of 7 chevrons as well. I agree pretty much with everything you guys said. It's a really good pilot. And even just watching the final cut as kind of the context of its own standalone movie, it's a really good story. But it's very impressive what Brad Wright and Jonathan Glassner do with telling you functionally the story of the movie, catching you up on that, telling your own kind of compelling story of this adventure that they're having just in this episode, and setting up the entire rest of the series. And it's honestly a feat, and they do it quite impressively. Mm-hmm. So The only thing that I would give it as a knock is the dragging of the escape scene. And that even with that dragging, there are other times where it feels rushed. And so, but overall, really great episode, great introduction.
So we agree it is a good pilot. I'm super looking forward to Enemy Within, mostly because Kowalski is one of my favorite side characters. So I'm super excited to start watching and prepping for that one.
So feel free to reach out to us. You can reach me at Cahils on Twitter and Pianosa 2 to the Fighting Eighth on Tumblr.
You can find me at JustTheMess250 on Twitter or at Professor Tennant on Tumblr.
You can find me at Melanie Martian, MarShan on Twitter, or you can find me on Tumblr at MyStupidDumbFlyboy. And then you can also find us, or if you want to send us like an email or anything, at
chevronslock7@gmail.com, which is also our Twitter handle. Which also, like, super thank you to everyone who's following and tweeting on Twitter. It's super fun for us to interact with you guys there. So thank you for retweeting and being engaged, because this is fun just as is, just us three talking, but it's even more fun when there's engaged people online to send gifts to. And someone sent us a link to watch Stargate Infinity, which we mentioned in the last podcast, which, guys, we're definitely gonna have to watch it, because I watched the first episode at work today and we can't let this go under the radar. So that's the kind of stuff that we wouldn't have access to without Twitter. So thank you. And I guess we're gonna close the iris, guys. And we'll see everyone next week.
Oh my gosh, you get it. You did it.
Yeah, baby. Guy, but man, he's such a softie and he's so good with kids.
Yeah.
I love him.
He has layers.
He, like an onion.
Oh god. How did I know that was coming?